Welcome to Comadres y Comics.
Hello guys, welcome to episode 4. We are your hosts. I am Sarah.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Jennifer.
How are you guys doing? Episode 4.
Wow.
I'm doing great.
I'm really digging that whole women ruling the world thing.
Yep. Yeah.
So it's true, you know.
It very much is.
Very much is. So,
what's the chisme de la semana?
Yeah. Well, let me start. Chisme de la semana is, for me, it's Rogue One, guys. I'm excited to watch this movie. It's another woman in the lead. Hopefully we can get action figures right away and not have to create a hashtag.
Yep.
Exactly. And I actually have tickets for December 15th at 10:30. I'm really excited. We're going to go with my nephew and my brother. He bought the tickets. So that's it for me. That's my chisme. That's it for me. I'm like really excited about this. I can't wait.
You're a huge Star Wars fan?
Yes. I remember watching episode 1. We actually only got tickets because it was such a hot ticket. We got tickets for 3 a.m.
Oh, my
Whoa.
Goodness.
3 a.m. at the Arclight Theater in Hollywood. And but we went early because there was going to be a Stormtrooper march on Hollywood Boulevard.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Oh, at so 3 a.m.?
No. The march was going to be like around 7 o'clock.
A.m.?
No, in the p.m. And so after work, we drove over there. We saw the march and we saw the lightsaber duel. And then we had nowhere to go. So we were pretty much
just hung out all
night. Yeah, wow. We actually, towards the end of right before 3, we actually took a nap in the car. And then when we got out, it was already time to go to work. So we just drove home, took showers, and went to work.
Wow.
That was the most hardcore.
Dedication.
Yeah, that was the most hardcore.
And did you feel like it was worth it?
Yeah, you said it was episode 1?
Yeah, it was.
That's the first prequel, right?
Yeah, it is, yeah. Now, maybe not so much, but because it was a lot of group of people.
Yeah.
Oh, the hype. Yeah, in the moment.
We actually got to see... not Rage Against the Machine. The band, I want to say Stone Roses, but it's not. You guys are going to totally hate me. But anyway, I saw that band, and because they were doing a Jimmy Kimmel, I guess, live.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so we were able to, like, walk up to Hollywood Boulevard and then just stick around for the show. So that was, you know, it was just kind of a
full experience.
Yeah, it was really a kind of an adventure.
Yeah.
So even if the movie kind of sucked, I don't regret doing that.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Yeah, that's cool.
Even though it was really painful to go to work right after. Yeah.
So, Jen, what's your chisme de la semana?
My chisme de la semana is... What was that I just said? I just slurred my words. My chisme de la semana actually is a shout-out to the Deadpool... creators, directors, everybody who worked for it, because they just got nominated for the Golden Globes as a Best Motion Picture in a musical or comedy. And shout out to Ryan Reynolds, who got nominated as a Best Actor in a Motion Picture, musical, or comedy.
I think that is amazing.
Yep. Yeah, definitely.
For a movie that had so much ups and downs, so many ups and downs, and just all of the behind the scenes that was, people were saying that there were problems and stuff, and then the R rating,
yeah.
And people thought on the one hand that that wasn't going to work, and on the other hand they wanted it.
Uh-huh.
I just, and obviously having seen it, I think it's totally deserved, but also I'm super shocked that the mainstream, what is the Golden Globes?
No,
it's
in the Americas, and it's also referred to as the Critics' Choice Award.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's just the fact that critics, like people who have been in this industry for a long time, nominated this movie.
Yes.
That's like, that's just because, like, superheroes movies don't usually get nominated because usually there's a lot of big money, big budget, and some of y'all might hate this, but there's not very well character development because these characters have already been are set and done in their ways, and everybody kind of knows who they are.
Yeah,
right.
But I think that the fact that they were able to do this with Deadpool, that besides like the drama and everything that went in, the actual struggle between the director, the actor, with their own studio.
Oh, so any luck winning Gita back?
I tried to hold on tight, Mr. Poole, but
Bandhu is more craftier and handsomer than me.
Well, I think you're pretty darn cute.
They got acknowledged. That's amazing.
I think it is amazing. I think it's very well deserved. I loved the movie. I love Deadpool.
Same.
And I give Ryan Reynolds lots of props for really standing his ground and sticking to his guns for all the creative decisions that he made with this movie, because he was such a Deadpool fan.
Yeah, and just like kudos to the fact that he was able to turn that character around so well after that god-awful introduction in Wolverine Origins.
I totally forgot about that.
Yeah, everybody forgot about it because they wanted to delete it from their mind.
You know, honestly, I didn't even know that that's who that character was supposed to be. I had to go back and rewatch it, and even rewatching it and knowing that, I was like, really?
Yeah.
It was horrible. It was really bad. I mean, a lot of people were disappointed. I know my brother was just like, oh, I can't believe they did that. Mm-hmm. To be the same person that plays that and brings it around, like you said, I'm like, that's a freaking special commendation right there.
Yeah.
I mean, you're doing the Lord's work.
That's funny considering who Deadpool is and what he does.
That's funny.
But, I mean, that's a real merit. I mean, to actually turn that around and mm-hmm. be nominated for the Golden Globes and creating such a huge fan base after messing up the character to begin with.
Yeah.
I mean, mm-hmm. that's some talent right there.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. Well, all the luck in the world. It might be a long shot, but my
hopes are high.
All the praise, yeah. My hopes are high.
absolutely.
Okay, so my chisme de la semana came to me literally this morning. A friend of mine posted a link on his Facebook page that caught my eye. He posted a link to a website called womenwhodraw.com. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is amazing. I clicked on the link, and there is basically an open directory of female professional illustrators, artists, and cartoonists who take freelance work. So this is a one-stop shop for you if you're looking for a female artist to work on your project, or you know, comic book, or if you have some kind of art stuff that you want to get done, anywhere from like business cards or having commissions done. It's super cool. I checked it out. It was created by a group of women artists in an effort, it said on the website, in an effort to increase the visibility of female illustrators of color, and LGBTQ+ and other minority groups of female illustrators. It's really super cool, and one of the things that I really thought was amazing that they do is that they have different categories that you can search by. So if you're looking for a specific type of illustrator who might have a specific background that you want to be prominent in your project, you can search by women who by their race and ethnicity. Mm-hmm. You can search by their location. So if you want to specifically have a creator who is from the West Coast or the East Coast, you can choose, you can select and search by religion, and also by orientation. So I thought that was really cool. They have quite a few women on there. So far, there's 8 Hispanic Latinas on there. Definitely want to check them out and see what they do. But that was that was my chisme de la semana, and I thought it fit in really, really awesomely with the topic that we're going to be talking about today.
Absolutely. I completely agree. Also, what we're doing this segment is we are actually having a drink today. It's from the brewery. It's a local brewery here in L.A., and we're having 9 ladies dancing. So what do you guys rate this beer?
Wait, what's the rating scale? Are we using the penis? Please tell me we're using the penis.
Let's use the penis.
All right. For okay, so for those of you who don't know, we have a board, and there is a penis drawn on it. We don't have an actual dildo with us, or that would be even more hilarious, because then we'll do, like, flaccidity.
So there's actually other podcasts that record here in the studio, and they have this on the board here that they use for their rating for they also drink beer, right?
Oh,
on
yeah.
There. Yeah. So this is their rating scale. There is
so just to describe it a little bit, initial is sort of like the chub.
You
know, the chub. The partial is like, you know, you're getting a little bit more excited. And then the full-on is you're completely erect. But then they had the rigid, which is the Super Saiyan, and that's when you're like teenage boner style, you know. So that's the rating system. And I guess we're incorporated into ours. So, Kristen, what do you think about this beer?
I really like it a lot. I really like the brewery, which the brewery is spelled Brewery. And it's here in L.A. Do you know specifically where it's located?
It's this Orange County, California.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So I've never physically been there, but I've had their beer many different places on tap here in the local Torrance area where I live. And they have quite a few that I really, really like. This one is, you said it was an ale, and it's more of like of an amber red ale. It tastes like the flavors are very prominent. Read off what you said that was in there.
It has cacao nibs, vanilla, coffee, and lactose added. It has a nice aroma, I think.
Yes,
Oh yeah, it smells absolutely lovely.
Yeah. And Nine Ladies Dancing kind of brings up to me like visions of the Nutcracker and other like holiday themes, and that's definitely what I get when I smell it. It's very just the smells are very like it reminds me of when my mom used to during the holidays, she would boil canela, and it would just really fill the house up. And that smell to this day reminds me of the holidays. And this isn't like a cinnamony smell, but it definitely smells like holidays to me. So it was really good. I really enjoyed it, and I would say I would give it a full.
Yeah, I actually agree with you. I think a full is a pretty spot on. It's an 11.3%.
Holy moly!
I know. Yeah. But the cool thing about that is I didn't want to let you guys know because you don't actually taste it, so it's not like a harsh beer.
Yeah.
It's a real mellow kind of like, I don't know. It just kind of rolls off the tongue. I think it's pretty good. So
it is pretty good.
I'm also giving it a full.
Okay, cool.
I am not as experienced with beer as my co-hosts. But it is some of the best beer I've ever had. So because I know there's probably even more delicious beer out there, I'm all going to give it a full instead of a rigid.
And so, it'll be your lifelong journey to find those beers.
Yep. I'm looking for the rigid beers, the Super Saiyan beers.
Exactly.
Recommend them to us, you guys.
For me, the non, whatever, is it manga? where does Super Saiyan come from?
Oh, I'm glad you asked. Super Saiyan comes from the cartoon and manga story of Dragon Ball Z.
Oh, okay.
And Super Saiyan is like when they kind of harnessed all their energy, and sometimes they even ask for the world to borrow some energy, and then they just like go Super Saiyan where they like bulk up. And their hair turns to gold, and then there's this like halo around their entire body, and it sounds really cool.
Okay.
That's a way of describing it. But yeah, it basically means like. Super ultimate mode.
Gotcha.
There's no limit to how powerful you can get.
Gotcha.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, in the cartoon, if you're familiar, it always surprises you what kind of energy levels they can. Yeah. It's over 9,000.
Yeah. Well, that's an iconic one. Props to Vegeta for actually skipping a level, but... But anyways.
But maybe we will show you like a little clip so you can kind of find out what the Super Saiyan level is.
With your description and your audio examples, I'm laughing at the actual picture of the hair on top of the head of the penis here on our board. It's definitely Super Saiyan.
I like that. So you guys, I don't know if you guys have heard, but the trailer for Spider-Man Homecoming has come out.
Yes.
So this movie is scheduled to come out in theaters on 7/7/17, which I like 7/7/7. That's pretty cool. It's a nice sequence. So we're going to cut for a bit and watch the trailer.
What's up, guys? Wait a minute. You guys aren't the real Avengers. I can tell Hulk gives it away.
Okay, I do have a quick question though. His friend, is it supposed to be Genk, or is it another different character?
I pronounce it Gonkai in my head when I read it, so I'm gonna go with that.
All right,
but Gonkai. That's what I thought. I absolutely thought that, and I thought I read somewhere that that's who it was gonna be. I mean, that is a Miles Morales character.
That's what I was gonna say.
So they are kind of meshing, but I love the idea of that character being there and kind of being his sidekick in a sense of not out there obviously fighting crime, but in high school, because he's a teenager, mm-hmm. and that teenagers have friends.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And teenagers, friends are their number one priority. That is their the peer group is the most important thing to a teenager, and so the fact that they have a character that is taking that role in his life and in this period of his time where he is developing his persona as Spider-Man, I think is like a really awesome plot point. And I assuming it's Gonkai just from his visually what he looks like. He's Asian. He is overweight. I is what my assumption is, but I don't know.
Yeah, I love the trailer, but I'm always the voice of dissent, you guys. Okay, if it is Gonkai, I'm a bit bitter,
Are you gonna say because then it should be Miles?
Then it should be Miles, because I'm glad that they included him. If it is him,
yeah.
Or even if it isn't him, if it's some new character, it at least has basis in him.
Yeah.
So I'm glad they included him. I love the fact that they did, but I'm just a little bitter because I love Miles Morales.
I do too.
And he is my son. I think like. As I said before, I'm happy about this Spider-Man. I really do like it. I love what they've presented. However, they would have literally reduced me to tears if it had been Miles, and if that would have been Miles, I would have cried at the trailer.
Yeah.
As it is, I'm excited to go see it. But that little bit of bitterness is still there.
I love Miles too. I do think, what is this, a third reboot?
It's the third reboot, and it is the sixth Spider-Man movie.
Okay, so I do think that on this third and sixth movie of theirs, that it kind of would have been pretty awesome for them to go that whole new direction and make it a Miles Morales movie. However, Miles Morales is on nobody's radar who doesn't read comics. The movie creators, the studio people,
they want the familiarity. Yeah, they want money.
Yeah, they want familiarity, and they want, and Spider-Man is a huge known character, but as Peter Parker.
It's true, because that's who the cartoon is about, the older cartoons.
Yeah.
It's true, but at the same time, Deadpool just got nominated for a Golden Globe, and they literally revolutionized how you make a superhero movie.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, also, when Deadpool came out, it is to date the highest grossing rated R movie.
Yeah.
As well as just like it beat the Avengers in profit. The original Avengers.
Wow.
And people don't seem to realize this, that this movie made a lot of money.
Yeah.
And that's because it basically went in the face of the studio. And it's just like, it's just going to say that creativity and, you know, directors and actors, you know, when they take that chance and they made money. But,
Right, exactly.
Let me sip this beer.
But that's absolutely true. I mean, they went against like the current of how movie studios they fix it so that the most of the populace agrees with the characters and likes what they see, like what they did with Doctor Strange and the Ancient One. I still, you know what, I watched that movie and I couldn't get past that because of the conversation we had. I did like it, but that part alone was like, it's very true. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I'm really excited about this movie, and I wish. Do you think that that's why Old Man Logan is going to be rated R? Was because Deadpool kind of like set the bar?
Yeah, definitely. I definitely think that this is. I honestly think it's the only reason Hugh Jackman agreed to make another Wolverine movie was because they said it was going to be rated R.
I mean, Wolverine is a rated R character.
Absolutely.
And I think that to do justice to the character, to the Wolverine character, to the Old Man Logan character, you have to be able to do and say certain things. Mm-hmm. And so I think that R rating is going to afford the movie a lot of creative pathways that having a lower rating would not.
Exactly.
No, and you know, the fact that Logan is a rated R movie is also a miracle in itself, not only because of Deadpool, but they apparently Fox wasn't even positive to the idea, and they told Hugh Jackman that he was going to have to take a pay cut to make the movie.
Really?
Wow. And Hugh Jackman said, yeah.
Nice.
I want this to be a rated R movie, and he took a pay cut. He's being paid less to make this movie.
Hmm.
I mean, he's still getting paid a lot.
Yeah,
but it's just like when you think about it, who does that? Like, they want to stick to this formula that they think will work.
Yeah.
And look, without trying, you're never gonna do anything, and people will get tired. I'm getting tired, and I love Marvel.
Yeah.
As it is, what I do like about it is the fact that they call it Homecoming,
mm-hmm.
Spider-Man,
mm-hmm.
Homecoming, because for one, Marvel finally has their hand
right
on Spider-Man, so it's just Spider-Man is coming home. So it's a play
true.
On that.
Yeah.
But and also the fact that it is putting into face the fact that he is a teenager.
Right.
And
yes.
that's what I love Andrew Garfield. Like,
I do too. Oh my God, yes.
like
the coolest.
The coolest. And but
he was just nominated too for a Golden Globe.
Yes, he was. It's just, I really like the fact that he's a teenager in this, that you can tell from his voice to his look and everything.
I hate to interrupt you, but even the soundtrack in the background, it's even like more youthful music, not like, mm-hmm. for instance, how we saw Iron Man and there was like Iron Maiden and all this other music that was like a little bit dated. This is more like new music as well, like contemporary music that is on the air right now. So I really like how they kind of marry that with the character.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
And being a teenager is a huge part of the Spider-Man character.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. The fact that he's the equivalent of Robin to the Marvel Universe.
Mm-hmm.
Batman has Robin. DC has Robin and Marvel has Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. That's how they get the young readers to come in. The first I've ever heard of Marvel as a kid was because of Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought he was the coolest. And it's just, he's he's the gateway character.
Yeah, I actually agree with that because my nephew, who's 9, his favorite character is Spider-Man and has been for like 3 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of his character, the one that he identifies with because of the cartoons. And so,
In the comic books, his quippiness his the way he jokes around and his banter back and forth with not only the other heroes but with the actual villains mm-hmm. that he's chasing and trying to capture is such a
kid thing,
yeah, such a teen thing, and the fact that they've already highlighted that and pointed that out in part of Civil War, I think, is what made a lot of fans super excited to see that small little section mm-hmm. of him in that movie, because that was Spider-Man.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
And not just only that, I really love the fact that, and I know the internet was all up in arms about it, but I love the fact that they casted people who teenagers know.
Mm-hmm.
I forget his name because as well, my little sister knows who he is.
The actor.
Oh, okay. She knows who he is, and she's 15 and everything, and she was so excited because he apparently comes out in something that she watches.
Something somewhere.
And Zendaya,
what's her character?
She's Mary Jane.
She is. I saw the trailer and I thought that has to be a Mary Jane character, but I literally in my mind thought, no, they wouldn't have the balls to do that.
They did, and that's
wow.
That's why I'm still so excited.
Yeah,
is that she's Mary Jane. She's like one of the most iconic like love interests ever.
Absolutely.
Who doesn't die? Because
yeah.
I love Gwen Stacy.
Spoiler
I love her
it.
So much. But I love Mary Jane, and I love the fact that they cast Zendaya because she's very recognizable,
yes,
especially to a lot of kids.
Yes,
a lot of kids, because she's come out. She has her own Disney Channel TV
mm-hmm.
show, and also she's like super active on Twitter and like and everything. So kids, teenagers, like, they know who she is. They know she's a familiar face, and now she's been cast as Mary Jane Watson. Not some, like, I love Emma Stone and everything, but she never had the teenager look that they were trying to go for.
Yeah,
that's
and
true.
Everything. And so I'm just really glad that they're casting kids for this. Well, they're not kids anymore. Technically speaking, a lot of them are 18, but they're babies.
To me, that's a kid.
Yeah, to me, they look like they're 12.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just like I'm not that older than them. I'm 22.
Yeah.
But even to me, I'm just like, oh, they just got out of high school. They're babies.
Alternately, I could be their grandmother.
Wow. My God, that's a little scary, but yes, I can see that.
Yeah.
Well, yes. So 7/7/17. Look for Spider-Man Homecoming. We will all be there. Jen and Sarah will probably be at the midnight showing.
Absolutely.
Yep. Midnight showing, always.
Absolutely. We're driving the kid with us, and we're gonna clap and cheer, and it's gonna be great.
I'm aiming for the earlier ones because usually, it's not that they have less people, but it's a little bit more subdued, I guess.
I saw Doctor Strange at an 11 o'clock showing, and mm-hmm. it was amazing.
Hey.
The kids, there was no kids there.
Uh-huh.
It was all adults. We all were excited to see the movie. And there was no like crazy ruckus going on in the background.
Yeah, exactly.
I loved it.
So yeah, I'm definitely gonna go see it. I am gonna bring my siblings with me, but they know how to behave. So,
good call.
And also, we work at a comic book store, and I know somebody's gonna be walking up in there talking spoilers and everything.
Yep, absolutely.
So I might as well watch it on the first day. So I'd be like, bring it. I know everything.
Well, I'm definitely looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Kristen, what are we reviewing today?
Today, the first three books we did, we focused on Latino creators and artists. And we decided to, because part of Comadres y Comics is not just highlighting Latino creators, but also highlighting female creators. So we wanted to kind of venture off into our other topic this week, and we are highlighting the trade paperback, the first paperback for Bitch Planet, written by Callie Sue DeConnick and illustrated by Valentine,
DeLandro.
DeLandro, yes. Mm-hmm. So, how did you, have you all read Bitch Planet in single issues before the trade came out?
I did.
Yes.
Yes.
I did not start reading Bitch Planet until I saw it on your Facebook feed.
Ah.
Yes. I saw you with your non-compliant shirt.
Yes.
And I was like, what is this? What is this NC? What does it stand for? And then I found out that it was Bitch Planet, so I went ahead and then just bought digital.
Yes.
Sorry, I keep saying virtual. Like I stepped in and I lived it. No, I bought it digitally on Comixology, and I started reading it, and it was really good. But some of the splash pages were so exceptional that I went ahead and bought the trade paperback.
Wow. Yes. Mm-hmm. So Bitch Planet came out about a month after I started working at a comic book shop, and when I first saw it, I mean, issue number one is the cover that is on the trade paperback, where it is the silhouette of a female that has both of her hands raised into the air, flipping the bird off to the reader, to the person looking at the book, and then it just says Bitch Planet.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. I literally thought it was a joke.
That's what I thought.
I posted on Facebook, and I'm like, haha, you need to read this. I bet you really want to read this. Haha. And I didn't think anything about it. Mm-hmm. After, and I took it home because at the time I was trying to read all the number ones to kind of educate myself on the new comics coming out, and I took it home and read it, and I was blown away. I was blown away by the storyline, the introduction to characters, and to the obvious underlying message of the book.
Is it really underlined? with a title like "Are You Woman Enough to Survive?" Bitch Planet, Girl Gangs, Caged and Enraged.
Yeah, like when I saw it, I was introduced by your non-compliant shirt. Uh-huh. So for me, I was like, non-compliant. So that was kind of my gateway into the title Bitch Planet.
Yes.
So for me, I almost thought, is this going to be like a deathmatch kind of thing, you know? And then I read it, and I was like, really blown away.
Yeah.
I actually started reading it, but did not read the letters that the writer wrote to the reader, and I didn't read the essays.
Oh, uh-huh.
So I just read it through, just the story itself, and it blew me away. But then you mentioned that there were those essays.
Yes.
The back matter.
So I actually went back and read them, and it blew me away to the second power. And then rereading, because I've read it three times. So reading it a third time, I even saw more things that I missed the two times.
Yeah.
So this is a book, ladies and gentlemen, that you can reread over and over again, and you will not get tired of it.
So something I want to highlight to you before we kind of get into a little bit more of the book is where Bitch Planet came from, where the idea came from, and why Callie Sue DeConnick wrote this book. I think it was Emerald City Comic Convention in Seattle that I went to, that I went to a panel that I believe was called Non-Compliant. I've heard Callie Sue tell this story, and I've also read it in interviews. But for those of you who aren't aware, Callie Sue DeConnick has worked on the Captain Marvel title for quite some time. I don't know the years that she was on it, but she took it over, and one of the first things that she did was change was change Carol Danvers' costume from the leotard and scarf wrapped around her waist that she used to wear when she was Ms. Marvel to an actual flight suit, because Carol Danvers, for those of you that might not know, is a colonel in the Air Force.
Wow.
And so she changed her to a colonel-esque type uniform, a uniform worthy of a colonel in the Air Force. And she got a lot of pushback from a lot of fans who were Ms. Marvel fans and Captain Marvel fans, basically told her, what are you doing changing our character? What are you doing? We don't need your angry feminist agenda in our comic.
Wow.
And because she changed her costume. And so Kelly Sue was like, wait, what? This isn't even angry feminist agenda, but you know what? I'll fucking show you angry feminist agenda. And nice. That is where the idea of Bitch Planet was born. And that mm-hmm. is the story that I tell women who come into the comic book shop. And I ask them, hey, are you reading Bitch Planet? And when they tell me no, there is an image first reprint of Bitch Planet number one. And what that means is that Image, the publishing company, reprints number ones of a lot of their titles and offers them for $1. Mm-hmm. So wow. I often order Bitch Planet Image First number one and just have them in the store and give them to women for free and say, wow. read this book and come back and talk to me. And almost 100% of the time they come back and they buy the trade. But I tell them that story. I tell them that story about why Kelly Sue wrote the book, and I give them the number one. And I am just all about Bitch Planet, and I try to get as many women reading the book as I can.
You know what? I love that you do that, because reading the story, it's a great story. It's well written. It has a lot of wonderful points and great art. But the including of the essays, I think, really sets the tone for where the writer is going with this. And I really find that the essays are so, not helpful, but they enrich me and teach me.
Yeah.
And even when I don't know certain words, I'll look them up and I'll learn them. So it's a great opportunity to get your hands on information that you might have not gotten your hands on otherwise.
Yeah. Well, and before we talk a little bit more about the essays, because I do think that they're so super important and fall right in line with the theme and the tone of the book, let's talk a little bit about just what the book is about. Jen, do you want to kind of give a brief little overview of what Bitch Planet is about?
So Bitch Planet, the premise is basically in this not so alternate
future,
maybe not so distant future, maybe not so alternate world, women, the patriarchal society has completely gone to another level, and if women are not compliant to the whims and regulations of this male-dominated society, they are cast out of the Earth and yep. sent to Bitch Planet, which is a prison on literally another planet. And going further off that is how the book opens. Is with, we get a cast yes. of about 6-7 women.
Yeah.
Who I have to read this because I really do kind of love that opening. And it says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Mother Earth, we used to say, before we understood. Before we came to know the heavens, to live here, and to feel her warm embrace. Space is the mother who receives us, you see. Earth is the father, and your father has cast you out. For your trespasses, your gluttony, your pride, your weakness, and your wickedness are such that you are beyond correction or castigation. Like a cancer, you must be excised from the world that bore you, for the well-being of us all, lest your sickness spread.
I know, that was such a powerful opening, yeah. And that just sets the tone for the rest of it.
That is the book right there. If women don't fit this arbitrary description of what is acceptable, they are literally kicked out of the earth so that they can be corrected, or if not, they can't be corrected, they stay there.
Yeah.
And for the first issue, the opening scene is basically a white woman has been sent to Bitch Planet.
Marianne Collins.
And she is adamant that she does not belong there. And you can see that she's very dedicated to her husband, that she is, that if you were to take any description, she's a dedicated wife and mother.
Mm-hmm.
However, because the husband basically grew tired of her, she was sent to Bitch Planet.
He actually pulled money out of savings to take care of that situation.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Of his wife.
Yes.
Yeah. And I don't want to spoil what it is, but it is... I'm going to put it lightly and said that if people had the access to do it, I wouldn't be surprised.
You know, that twist... The plot mm-hmm. twist in that first issue was really what pulled me in.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. I was reading it, and you read from the husband's viewpoint as you are also reading Marianne's viewpoint, mm-hmm. and you think that the conversation and what he is saying is going one way, mm-hmm. and at the end with the reveal, you're like, oh my God. And it was like that right mm-hmm. there to me was like what pulled me into this and made me want to continue to read.
Mm-hmm. And it was just, it's such a powerful book, I think, that that really kind of highlights just how close our society is to something like that. Like it wouldn't be surprising. And the fact that in some places this does happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
To put emphasis on this, when I was rereading this, I was absolutely brutally reminded of Memoirs from a Woman's Prison by Nawal El Sadawi,
mm-hmm.
who is an Egyptian female author who was imprisoned by the previous president who passed away. I forget his name, but the fact that he passed away, and then the revolution was trying to get rid of the previous basically she was imprisoned by the previous president uh-huh. of Egypt for her political writings, for her outspokenness, yeah. for her for just being outspoken about what democracy is,
mm-hmm.
and he imprisoned her along with many other women who were doctors, who were basically very prominent. But not only did he imprison them, he also imprisoned religious women. Sadawi writes about this, that the fact that ultra-liberal and ultra-conservative were imprisoned under his rule, mm-hmm. and I was just brutally reminded of this, because that's what you see in Bleach Planet is too. This is not just reserved for what people would think as like, oh, only like liberal women
right.
are like this, only like loose wicked women. No, even very kind of
a meek housewife like Marianne yeah. Collins.
Yes.
Because she didn't fit what the husband's perception of like a happy life would be. Mm-hmm. And that only reminds me of those men who accuse their wives of infidelity to get stoned by the
yeah.
village
yeah.
because
yeah.
they want to trade up.
Yeah.
And it's happening now. We don't have to say in an alternate distant future.
No, yeah. No. The alternate distant future part is just being sent to another planet. But this, women have been held to a different standard than man since the beginning of time. Mm-hmm. And Sarah keeps referring to my non-compliant shirt, which is like it's kind of the catchphrase of Bitch Planet, that if you're deemed non-compliant to the patriarchal rules and regulations, then that's what gets you sent to Bitch Planet. And the back of the trade actually has all the ways that you could be non-compliant. The back of the trade says, are you non-compliant? Do you fit in your box? Are you too fat, too thin, too loud, too shy, too religious, too secular, too prudish, too sexual, too queer, too black, too brown, too whatever it is they'll judge you for today, then you just may belong on Bitch Planet. And I think that I can very, very say with much conviction that I definitely would be considered non-compliant on many different levels.
Oh, same here. Like, as I was reading, I'm just like, oh, man, I can fit into a lot of these. Like...
Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite characters in the book is a character called Penelope Roll.
Penny!
And she goes by the term, or by the moniker, Penny Roll. And it's very interesting when you see the reasons why she is sent to Bitch Planet in the first place. One of them is that she has repeated citations for aesthetic offenses.
Yeah.
She's not pretty to look at.
As a matter of fact, she has a tattoo that says Born Big.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Which I love. I want to tattoo that on myself now.
Yeah. One of her other offenses is wanton obesity.
Mm-hmm.
So that gives you just an idea of why some of these women were chosen. She has other offenses too. But one of the things that I love about this book, and what has really, spoken to me on a personal level, is the fact that some of the issues go to the backstory of why and how these women were deemed non-compliant and sent to Bitch Planet. And the reason why I say that it's personal for me is because I used to work for an organization that worked with girls involved in the juvenile justice system. And that was working with girls between the ages of 12 and around 22 who were detained in probation camp. Anywhere from 6 months to 2 years at a time, or also in the community but on probation, trying to prevent recidivism going back to either probation camp or juvenile hall. And for the most part, for most of society, all they saw was these young women's offenses. They saw the crimes that they committed. But in working with them on a day-to-day basis and speaking with them and learning about their history and learning about what they had to deal with in their very young lives, you can form empathy for what it was that they went through and how they got to a place in their life that they felt like committing that crime was the right choice for them. And that's how I feel when I read these backstories of the characters in Bitch Planet. Mm-hmm. You see that with Penny Roll, she, for whatever reason, in this book, in the first trade, we don't find out why, but she's living with her grandmother. We don't know where her parents are. She was taken away from her grandmother at a very young age. She was 9 years old. Mm-hmm. And she was put into the system. And that resonates with me very, very much, because a majority of the girls that I worked with in one way, shape, or form were in the system before they even got to probation camp or juvenile hall. So, and I actually had the opportunity to meet Kelly Sue, at Emerald City, and I told her that, and I told her that, a lot of the things that were written in here, with the way that a woman's upbringing and past really affects her and having to make decisions that gets them put into prison, was a lot of the things that she wrote were so true to life of my experiences with the girls that I worked with.
Mm-hmm. Just Penny Roll's backstory, just to let you guys know, the writer wrote in the book, like, 'cause she actually writes to the readers while you're reading through the issues, but she says that every third issue is going to be like a backstory on one of the inmates.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And for this Penny Roll, she reminds me a lot of Precious.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Like, she's put in the system at an early age, and she doesn't know anything else, and she's being told she's non-compliant. The people that kind of are trying to help her out, like, as she's growing older and the kids pick on her,
mm-hmm.
and they just repeatedly tell her that she doesn't look like anyone else, and why doesn't her hair behave the way it's supposed to,
mm-hmm.
and why does she pick fights, and, you know, it's sad to be all by yourself trying to fight against all these people who think they know what you should be.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And just to give a visual, Penny Roll is, she's a black woman, and I would say she weighs anywhere between 400 and 500 pounds.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
Just based on how she's drawn. And she was, when they flash back to her childhood years, she's a big girl, mm-hmm. And so you can see how, and why maybe other young kids might pick on her or make fun of her, pointing out her differences. So, yeah, I think that highlighting the backstory of the characters is really super important, because it also humanizes them, which was also something that I felt very strongly about with the girls that I worked with, mm-hmm. is that these girls were not just the crimes that they committed. They had families, they had lives outside of the juvenile justice system, mm-hmm. and they were human beings. And I think that the way that Kelly Sue writes about the backstories of the characters in this book does that for the reader. It humanizes them for her.
Yeah, I agree with you. Not only that, it's just the reason I love Penny so much is the fact that every inmate, I'm going to assume, based on the fact that we did see this with some of the other characters, every inmate is tried to put through some rehabilitation process,
yes.
quote unquote.
Mm-hmm.
And Penny is taken, and she's like attached, like these brainwave monitors and anything, and she's giving a very large screen, and they're trying to make her feel bad about mm-hmm. her image, about how she looks, and basically what this machine is supposed to do is give the idealized
yes.
version of who she is, of who she wants to be. In some form, they're trying to say oh, this is who you could be, but you're not that.
Right.
And her idealized version when she looks in that screen / mirror is herself.
The way she looks.
And that's the reason I love that issue so much, is because that's where I wish I could be.
Mm. Me too. My God, yes. Absolutely. I agree with that.
Yeah, I want to so badly just be able to look in the mirror and say I'm satisfied with what I'm looking at.
Can I ask, when you guys read that part about the mirror, that creepy weird mirror mm-hmm. with the synopsis of your brain, did you guys take a moment and think of what you would see in that mirror?
I did.
Me too.
I did. I did too. And it's just even now that image is very different from if you had given it to me at 15, it would be a lot more different.
Oh yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think we're slowly coming to realization that this is us and we love each other.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just like, and it's just, I just really love that issue because it really put into focus that you should really love yourself, that you can, that it's possible that no matter how you look like, how you act like, how what it is that you've done, you can still utterly and completely love yourself.
That was one of my favorite scenes in the book, exactly for those reasons that you're saying, is that all her life she's had people putting her down, making fun of her, picking on her, really trying to change her into somebody that she wasn't. There's, Sarah, you alluded to a scene where there's like a headmistress at the school that she's at that is trying to press her hair out so that it's straight and keeps saying, you know, your hair would be so much more pretty if it would just be like everybody else's, basically. And so for the character to have experienced all of that in her lifetime and still, when asked who her true self is and who her idealized true self would be if she could change anything and be anything, and the fact that she looked into that mirror and she saw herself as she was like so fucking powerful.
That alone was like, yes. Because for a moment when she looked away and was like, you guys are crazy, or she said something to that notion, but she wasn't looking at the mirror. I was like, she's afraid. I felt as reading it, I'm like, she's afraid of looking in the mirror. But when she did and I saw her as herself, I'm like, oh my God, you rock.
And it was really cool too, because what she says is, if it's broke, don't fix it. And that was what her grandmother used to tell her, the grandmother that she was ripped from when she was younger. And so I really loved that scene. I really love Pennyroll as a character in the book, and she becomes a real integral part of the storyline. So part of the storyline is that these in this not too distant future, one of the things that it has become super popular on Earth is this when I read it and I think about it, I see it as like a Hunger Games-esque type thing.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
It's called the Megaton. And basically, there's two teams that fight against each other, and it can be made up of any number of people on both of the teams. The people on the team have to add up to 1,000 pounds. They can't go over 1,000 pounds. So that's 1,000 pounds per team. And so it's nicknamed Megaton. And I think the head of the prison or whatever gets this bright idea to create a team of the women from the prison. And it's all about money and raising the ratings and getting people to, interact. I don't know what that meant in the book, that the interactions were down, but they wanted to somehow get people more excited about the Megaton because I guess that viewings had been down.
I guess the person who actually came up with the Megaton with the women who were non-compliant was Father Josephine. Josephine, and he I guess when you have people engaged, it's like people that watch, the people that are watching, sort of like, I guess, the rating system of people that are watching at the time.
Do you know what's funny? The first time I read this book and I read his name, I thought he was a priest.
That's what I thought too. Is he not a priest?
He's not a priest. No, he's not a priest. What? He's forcing people to call him Father because Father is the male, it's like the highest male status that you can have.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
He's
not a priest.
I'm on the internet too much because I was about to say, is it a daddy kink? I was just like, does the reason that he want people to call him that is because he wants them to call him daddy?
I don't know. I would not discount that. But
yeah, I don't think he's there because he actually corrects people when they try to talk to them. He goes, no, call me Father.
No, it's a power thing.
Yeah.
It's a power thing. It's not a religious thing. And I didn't pick up on that the first time I read it. When I reread it, I was like, oh my gosh. That makes total sense.
Oh my God.
Wow, my mind is blown. I had no idea. I was still believing it was a religious thing.
No.
And, just on the whole talking about every third issue is going to be related to a backstory and a character. One of the letters from the writer to the readers is saying that they're going to bring in a guest artist.
Oh, yes.
To do the art for the third issue on the backstories. And in that same letter, she had said that they wanted to have Penelope have lost some weight during her backstory.
Oh, uh-huh.
But they couldn't fit it into the whole story, but mm-hmm. it was going to reflect on how she lost herself for a moment.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and I was like, dang, they should have done that, because it sounds like it would have been so awesome.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So, a little bit back to the plot, we kind of diverged a little bit.
Sorry.
No, that's okay.
I really wanted to say that.
I forgot that I was really talking about that.
No, I was really blown back by that.
Yeah, that's
that little point that
yeah,
she had.
I yeah.
was like, oh my God, that would have been awesome.
So the main character, I'm not the main character because I feel like they're all main characters. But Kamau Kogo is like this woman who's just like so buff, and she has combat training because it comes out, and she actually tries to save Marion from being killed.
Right.
And so when she does that, it becomes apparent that she has training in some way, shape, or form. At this point, we don't know why or how or what that is. Mm-hmm. But they approach her to put this team together. And she doesn't want to do it. She doesn't want to have anything to do with it. But one of the other inmates, I can't remember, is it the one whose father is going to be coming? I can't remember her name.
Mikoko? There's actually two people that approach her while she's
running. But the young Asian girl is the one I think that really changes her mind when she tells her about her relationship to the ship.
Mako.
Mm-hmm. So we follow now of Kamau. I guess that's how you pronounce
it. It's called Cam.
Cam. She's putting together this team, and there's a plan that hatches around it, and they're training, and they're getting ready for the Megaton that's going to be televised back onto Earth. And so that's kind of what the first five issues follows and is about. And it's just so amazing, the character development and the storyline, and even the cliffhanger that happens. There is a cliffhanger at issue 5.
Yes, definitely. I want to point out that the art really works really well. Like when they are actually, one of my favorite ones was there where Cam is running and Violet comes up to her and runs beside her, and Penelope is right beside her trying to run too.
Yes.
And Penelope gets tired and stuff.
Yes.
So then she gets, you see, okay, so there's a
conversation. I love this.
Yes, there's a conversation going on between Cam and Violet about the Megaton and forming the group. But in the background, you have to really like pay attention to the whole scene. But in the background, you see that Penelope is getting hassled by the guards. And at first you see her like,
he's coming after her with a baton.
And then in the next frame, she's kicking his ass.
She has the baton.
And all this is going on in the background while they're having a conversation about the Megaton.
Yes.
And then after that, Violet leaves her side, and she joins
the fight. Yes. You know, I missed that the first time around, and I saw it this time.
Yes.
I was like, oh, my gosh, that's amazing.
So she's joining in the fight. Now there's, like, I don't know, like five guards in this fight.
Uh-huh.
And they're kicking ass, and that's when Mako comes and joins Cam running next to her and hatching out her plan with this, because she actually designed the ship.
Yeah.
Was it the ship?
The ship that they're going, that the Megaton would be taking place on,
Yeah, so now all of our interests are being perked up. We're like, what is going on? But then we see that there's a gentleman. His name is,
I don't remember what his name
Makoto.
Is.
Makoto.
Oh, okay.
Makoto. He said, call me Mac.
Yeah.
So Mac is a gentleman who is asked to design the field for the Megaton, and he is asked by the father to go to Bitch Planet. And we don't know why he refuses to go. We're intrigued. And then he's like, I have to talk to my wife. And as they're having a conversation between him and his wife, you're thinking, why is it such a big deal? And then we find out that Michael is a Mac's daughter.
You know, it's interesting the conversation that you're referring to when he says, I have to go talk to my wife about it.
Mm-hmm.
The person that he's speaking about
tells
him, okay, but maybe don't tell the people that are asking you about this that you did that. Inferring that don't ever let the people in charge with power know that you are asking your wife for permission.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I thought that was, like, super cool.
Yeah, the first
time. I mean, not cool that it happened, but cool that that was kind of like
a conversation they had and they had to have.
Yeah.
And he's like, do you understand? And he says, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was a weird undertone. The first time around when I read it, I didn't get it. I thought he meant something else completely. But when he talked to his wife this third time that I read it, I was like, oh, wow. Like, these are actual normal people marriage. And I'm thinking, how did they allow their daughter to get... Because he's obviously a powerful man.
Yeah.
How the heck did their daughter end up on which planet?
I do know that there is a backstory issue for Michael.
Yes.
Yeah.
I can't wait. Is it the next one?
I want to say that yes.
Okay.
But I can't remember.
I'm so excited. I can't wait. I can't wait.
So there's a lot of different players here in the book. There's a lot of different ways that the story could go, especially given that these characters all have backstories. They all have reasons why they're there. We see even in the very beginning, they straight out say that there was one volunteer that came. All the women that were coming to Bitch Planet, there were 7 of them, I think, it says, and 6 of them were criminals or non-compliance, and 1 volunteered to be there. And they didn't specifically say who, but just in the storyline, you can kind of guess of who it was.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of story to tell.
And one of the things that I really liked was, as some of the characters were talking, when they were, chosen to be in the Megaton team, as the different frames of women talking, they had a little bar which said their age, their name,
and what they did to get, and
their weight. But
because that could have been the reason they were on Bitch Planet.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, absolutely. And I thought that was really informative. I mean, it was so subtle, but it was part of the story and of what you kind of. When you saw what their infraction was, you kind of got a feel of what they said and connected it with what they had done wrong.
Yeah.
And kind of formed a personality for this character.
Yes.
With just one frame per person.
Yes.
Yeah. That's genius.
And what you're saying right now, forming a personality for this character is so, so important. Not just for Bitch Planet, but for any book. And one of the things that is really iconic of Kelly Sue DeConnick is her sexy lamp test that she
she has coined.
Yeah, she's coined the term sexy lamp test that basically says that if you can replace a female character in a story with a sexy lamp and it not affect the plot line whatsoever, then your writing sucks.
Yep. Are you serious?
That basically
so
women
cool.
are not just accoutrements.
Mm-hmm.
They mean something. They're individuals. They have characters. They have personalities. And they matter in a story. They should matter in a story. And they're not just there to be pretty, to be looked at.
Yeah.
We make your children. That's it.
That's all there is.
Without us, the population would die. Humanity, as we know, would end.
Yep.
Well, it would end.
Mm-hmm.
Which I find that the sexy lamp test is kind of like a takeoff of the what's the other one?
The Bechdel test.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's right. Can you clarify what that is for our listeners?
Well, I don't know what the actual points are.
The Bechdel test is basically that if there's two women, they have to talk, but what it is that they talk about must not include the man.
That it must not be about men.
Yeah, must not be about men or the love interest. That is the Bechdel test because prior to that, and even still now, they have a lot of movies have women, and that when they interact, all they talk about is men. And Alice Bechdel, I believe that she was the one who it's named after, basically was just like, that's bullshit. Women don't just talk about men. We talk about other things.
Yeah.
And that if you don't include that of women talking about more than just men, then also you have shitty writing, and you need to improve that.
Yes.
Which is true. I mean, if you actually, now that you know what this is, I mean, go ahead and watch a movie and watch the interaction and the conversations that women have in movies. I mean, just to pick out something random, I mean, Mean Girls.
Oh.
Come on.
Oh, God, I love Mean Girls.
I mean, I love it. It's a guilty pleasure because it's so funny and it's so quirky and it's, you know, it's good acting and stuff. I mean, Amy Adams, isn't it, right? Amy Adams? Or am I wrong on that?
It's Tina Fey.
And Tina Fey is in it as well. But, I mean,
Tina Fey wrote it, right?
Yeah, she wrote it.
Really?
Yeah, and a quick story. They actually, Mean Girls was slated to be a rated R movie, but Tina Fey fought for that PG-13 rating because she said that...
Interesting.
She said that this is what teenage girls talk about.
Yeah.
This is how it is. She wanted to depict kind of like a true version of how teenage life is, and the only reason that she was able to avoid that rated R rating was because that there's a famous scene in there when they talk about a girl who made out with a hot dog is referring to a blowjob.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
yeah.
You know what? I actually thought it was a hot dog. Oh my God.
No, that's what. And so that she actually had to change that so that it could avoid that PG-13. So it could avoid that rated R rating.
So you know what I'm finding super, super funny, and not in a ha ha way, but in a I'm so frustrated type of way, is that earlier in this conversation we spoke about Deadpool, where they had to fight for
an R rating.
Yeah. But everyone wanted it to be PG-13. Mm-hmm. But you stick a group of young, attractive women in a movie, and all of a sudden everyone wants it to be an R rating.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God.
And just because they make references to sex, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's just like,
because women are good for nothing more than to be the sexual, mm-hmm. Be the source of sexual pleasure for men.
They're the sexy lamps.
Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah, and so it's just, that's a funny byline. But, anyways, what were you saying?
What I was saying is that just, you know, Mean Girls, I mean, It's teenage girls, but most of the conversations are, the main character, she has a crush on this guy, and her main goal is to get with this guy,
mm-hmm.
Trampling over the most popular woman in the school. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, just that alone, you know, fails the test. Mm-hmm. And so many other movies fail the test because they always have dialogue about women talking about other men,
mm-hmm.
and about other girls regarding mm-hmm. men. It just... we have a lot of work ahead of us is basically what's going on here.
Yeah, and it's just like the fact that some of these movies can't pass such a simple test.
Yeah.
Like, come on, we're not asking you to do like freaking like some strong arithmetic here, like calculus. it's a simple thing. When two women talk, they talk about more than just men.
Yeah.
Or give the character some kind of characteristics mm-hmm. that can be replaced by that can't be replaced by a sexy lamp. Like, come on, it's not that hard. Mm-hmm. Like, I certainly, when I write men in any stories that I do, I'm just like, I'm not having them talk about just like, I don't know, having sex or anything. Mm-hmm. It's just like, it's not that hard. Just listen to how women talk, or
yeah.
See, like, if you have a mom, if you have a sister, if you have a daughter, if you have, mm-hmm. That's such an old thing, like, literally listen to how they talk, and let me tell you, it's not just about men, we talk about so many other things.
Which is why I was really shocked at Hernandez, was it Jaime?
Yeah, Jaime.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Jaime Hernandez's ability to write female dialogue so well.
Oh, yeah, you know. Absolutely. Yeah, yes. He's a mechanic. Like,
yes. I was very, very surprised, and I really appreciate that when I read that in the comic, and when I read comics that I know are written by men, when I read the dialogue that they have between women, like what was I reading the other? I can't remember, but it does exist, and I love it when I see it, and I just, like Jen said, I challenge you to look at those things and to be aware of them. I'm not asking you to write a letter and start a picket line, but just be aware, mm-hmm. Because it does exist, and women still to this day are held to different standards. And I have to say that comics is slow. It is a medium that is slowly changing. It's slowly, slowly changing. Change is happening, but it's happening slowly, slowly, and there's a lot of pushback.
I know, just like the fact that there's so much pushback, and I'm just like, oh my god, you still have things like tarot and grim fairy tales, like
Lady Death,
Lady Death, like
jungle fantasy.
Oh my jungle!
Do not get me started jungle fantasy. That is.
Like, you still have your comics that are catering to you. Jesus, we only have, like, a few, like, maybe two or three comics from the 50 that are out there. Like, I'm not saying, you know what, don't let us have this. I'm taking it, and I'm asking for more, because screw that. Yeah.
Nice. I like that.
Yeah. So one of the things that Kelly Sue mentions when she talks about Bitch Planet, and she talks about why she started writing the book, was not just the pushback that she got from people who were fans of Captain Marvel and Ms. Marvel, but also just to really answer and be cognizant in her writing, to be aware of the fact that women are the largest, fastest growing group of comic readers out there.
Mm-hmm.
That 50%, if not more, comic readers and consumers are women now. Mm-hmm. And she attributes that to three different things. The first thing she attributes it to is the fact that Image Comics is strong and back on the scene. I guess apparently they took a break I did not realize, mm-hmm. Because I haven't always been a comic mm-hmm. reader. But apparently they came back, and Image Comics is a way for women to, or not just women, but people to get into comics who don't have to have this long, extensive history with reading comics.
Yeah.
For example, like I pick up a Superman comic. We were talking earlier about Red Sun. I don't have any background in reading Superman comics to even know that before I read it, that was like just a completely separate storyline from all mm-hmm. other Superman comics. And I think that intimidates a lot of people, period.
Yeah.
But especially women who, growing up as children, were always probably told, because I hear it all the time in the shop, even now, that comics are for boys.
Absolutely.
It's not. It's not a thing that's for girls.
That makes me so mad. Like,
so, mm-hmm. and especially because there's that thought out there that comics are just superheroes, which is not true. But even if it was just superheroes, I freaking like my superhero comics.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you.
And so, so that's the one thing. The Image came back onto the scene, and it was a publisher that they could jump onto and not have to have any background. The second thing was the fact that Marvel movies and other cinematic movies started to really gain popularity, and women are moviegoers. Mm-hmm. And we love to go to the movies, and whether or not we go with a boyfriend or a husband or just as a group of friends, we enjoy going to go see a movie. And so they would go to a movie, they would see a character, they would be interested in the storyline, and they'd be like, hey, I want to check this out. And they would go into a comic shop and ask, hey, you know, I think that Loki's cute, you know, let me read a book, whatever. Yeah. Or, you
girl,
know,
I got all the recommendations. I agree with that statement.
And the third thing that Kelly Sue attributed popularity of comics with women was digital comics. That the fact that digital comics is so popular and easily accessible, you literally have a comic store in your pocket, because everybody has a smartphone except for Kevin. Kevin is an employee at our shop that has a flip phone still.
Yeah, he's a bit of a technophobe.
But yeah, so that allowed women who might have felt a little apprehensive of stepping foot into a comic shop the ability to have access to all the comics that they wanted to. And so they started reading, and they became fans. And that is, those are the three things that Kelly Sue attributes to the rise in popularity of comics with women. And so her point is just that we're reading comics, people. We're reading comics, and just like Jen says, we're reading comics, and we demand that you start writing stories that respect us in the comics, not just the storylines that you're writing about, but the way that you're drawing us and the way that you are treating us in your comics and the way that other fans are treating us in the discussion chat rooms. I mean, it's just it's really, like I said, a slow changing medium. But I definitely do everything that I can on a daily basis to be an ally and advocate of that change.
Mm-hmm. I absolutely agree. With the comiXology, the digital comics, I mean, most of the time I can hide the comic book purchases from my husband. They're in digital form, and he doesn't know how much he spent. And not only that, I mean, I was waiting in line to for a Monkish beer release, and I was able to pull out my iPad and just start reading. I mean, that's so wonderful, because you can just pull it out at any point. You could be waiting in any line and just pull out a whole library of books. I also agree. There's a lot of changes in how they write women and women characters and their interaction with other people, or maybe their scarred past and how they've overcome it. I mean, I really love those stories. So, yeah, people, step it up, damn it.
I mean, we definitely have our allies out there. There are more writers than just Kelly Sue. There's other female writers, but I also think just as importantly, if not even more so, are the male allies that we have out there that are in the comic book industry that have, and I'm sorry to say it's the truth, they have the juice behind them to be able to stand up and say, this is important, because unfortunately people still listen more to men than they do to women.
Yeah.
But there, in other notes, I mean, there are comic book based stories that are out there that are not only Marvel or DC. I mean, there's shows like Constantine, and well, that was canceled.
But I got my issues with Constantine. We can get into it.
We'll dive into that.
Yeah.
But there's iZombie, a strong female lead. There's all sorts of things.
Preacher,
of course. You disagreeing with the preacher?
Oh, no, I love Preacher. Preacher is great. Like, I literally swallowed wrong. I was just like, I wanted to say something. I wanted to say, like, I love Preacher, but then that was just, I almost killed myself.
I mean, things like American Splendor and Ghost World.
Westworld? Oh,
yeah, I mean, there's a lot of movies out there that are based on comic book characters. So, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of exposure out there, but we need a little bit more characters.
Not until I started working at the comic shop did I realize how many movies and TV shows were based on comic books that I had no idea. I mean, to this day, there are people that walk into the comic shop and are amazed and shocked that Walking Dead was a comic book first. Yeah. And for many, many years, it was a comic book first. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of people are enjoying the storytelling without really even realizing what the source material is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and let me tell you, the source material is always a lot better.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. That goes without saying. And for those who don't know, I'm sorry for you guys because you should know this by now. Well, that was our review. Any closing remarks about Bitch Planet?
Read Bitch Planet.
Yes, read it. It's
absolutely
amazing.
Read Bitch Planet. And I give it the whole damn panaderia.
Yeah, Bitch Planet is a full indulgence. It's like seis conchas and all the milk and temporado available.
I agree with the ladies. I mean, and like I said, you can read this three times, which I have, and still find new key elements in the story that you might have missed in the first two times. So, and I'd highly recommend reading the essays between issues because those are really informative. Even if you don't agree with what they stand for, they're very educational. So I'm going to give this the whole panaderia.
And just a side note, the only way that you can get those essays is in the single issues. So definitely if you are a trade paperback buyer, it's an Image paperback. And if you don't know, all Image number one trade paperbacks are just $9.99. So that's an awesome price to be able to jump on to any title, but for sure Bitch Planet. But you're not going to get those essays that are in the back of the single issues. It was just too much extra to include them, and they wanted to be able to print the book at a reasonable price, at the $9.99 price, and adding all that back matter was just going to make it too expensive of a book, so they decided not to. There was some talk maybe at one time that they would publish them, but right now it looks like they are just going to offer them as like a special something for people who buy singles.
Or I think what might happen, because they did with the Southern Bastards too, is that they'll wait for the second volume, release a hardcover version.
Oh, yes.
That will include them.
Yes.
But if anything, towards the end of Bitch Planet, it does include a discussion.
It does.
It does,
yes,
include like a discussion guide, like questions that if you want to do in a book club or just like maybe like you're an educator or anything that you can use as a discussion piece.
Yes.
And which I think is really awesome.
I think that probably this book is used in many women's studies classes around the world. It should be.
And just in another note, I actually bought this in digital form to begin with, and I did get the essays in the digital form.
Yeah.
But then I wanted to experience the splash pages on a different level, so I actually went out and got the trade paperback. So that's how much this book was an impact in my life. So if you want the essays, you can go digital, but I do highly recommend getting the trade paperback just because you can get the splash pages and the full image of them. And then, as Kristen was saying, the individual issues are pretty much the way to go, guys.
Yeah, and we didn't touch a lot on it, but definitely the art is beautiful, and the colors, the colorist just does an amazing job. It's just really the dream team of creators on this book.
Absolutely, I agree. And I really like the little letters to the readers because they involve you in their creative kind of energy. So I really enjoy that because I feel like I'm part of their team. It's really cool. It's an intimate look see that that brings you in as a fan of this book.
Yeah.
So I really like that, and I really appreciate that from this writer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not only that, what I really like about the artwork in this is the cover pages. They are made in a style that is very reminiscent of wrestling. Wrestling ads, and in a few of them, they can even be seen as kind of like an adaptation of all the old 50s mm-hmm. like magazine covers,
mm-hmm.
and how they're stylized, and just kind of like really turning that into something else. Mm-hmm. So some of them are very reminiscent of old wrestling posters and stuff like that, and some of them are look like the old 50s magazine covers, but like in a very different view. It's definitely something that you have to see. That
yeah,
I
absolutely. Pick it up, flip through it, buy it, do it.
Yes.
Well, we all agree that that book was absolutely excellent. So, mm-hmm. guys, what is on the radar?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, if you want something a bit more real life that is reminiscent of this, I do recommend Memoirs of a Woman's Prison by Nawal El-Sadawi. But also, this is just like a side note, I'm currently reading an actual prose book, like words, you guys, no pictures. and it's just, It's called His Majesty's Dragon, written by Naomi Novik, who is a woman, and it's really good. And I'm not just saying this because it has dragons in it, and like, I really love dragons. So that's my on the radar right now. If you want something related to this book, I do recommend Memoirs of a Woman's Prison. Again, an actual word book. And if you want something a bit more fun, a bit more fantasy, His Majesty's Dragon by Naomi Novik.
Excellent.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, on the radar for me is For the Love of Spock. It just came out on Netflix. I am so excited. I was so excited. I know she has her Spock t-shirt.
I have.
I was like, I knew yes. this would hit.
Oh. Yes. It has Mirror Marianne and Spock and the evil Spock facing each other.
Oh, snap. Nice one. But yes, I'm very excited to see this. I actually was going to watch it before we recorded, but my TV died. I can't get over it, guys. I just saw tears. Yeah, I'm sorry. It was actually directed by Adam Nimoy, which is the son
Leonard
Nimoy. Yeah, mm-hmm. Leonard Nimoy. It started out as a Kickstarter campaign in June of 2015 to collect $600,000. I'm not good with math, but yes, I think it was $600,000.
Mm-hmm.
And the backers pledged more than what they wanted.
Yeah.
It has 100% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. So,
oh,
guys,
wow.
I am super excited. I actually was talking to my brother who did watch it this weekend, mm-hmm. and he was saying how it actually started off as kind of a tribute to Spock mm-hmm. and the, like, I think it was, 80 or 50 years of Star Trek. But it turned into kind of a memoir, a kind of a love documentary
yeah.
to his dad, because he actually yeah. died mm-hmm. before he finished the documentary. And mm-hmm. originally they were going to have Siler, or who's played
oh,
Spock
yeah.
now,
uh-huh.
Narrate the movie, but because there was so many stories mm-hmm. revolving around him that they actually didn't need a narrator for this movie. So I'm really excited about
him.
Yeah.
So you guys, it's on Netflix. It just popped up on the feed, so I recommend you watch it. I am very excited. I can't wait to watch it. I mean, Leonard Nimoy, dude, he sang these weird songs, and he wore the Spock ears, and it was just, I mean, he was so engrossed in this character. I mean, I can't wait
to
learn more.
Yeah, and it's just, a lot of people don't know this, but Leonard Nimoy was more than just an actor. He was a poet. He was a mm-hmm. musician. He was, in all essence, a creator. He was the Renaissance man, and this just really, which is really funny because he played Spock,
right.
who was the opposite of that. He was a science dude, so this movie will make you cry. I can't wait. Like, you're gonna cry. I cried.
I need a good
Oh, did you
cry.
See it already? Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. So yeah, that's on the radar for me, guys.
Okay, so on the radar for me is a recommendation that I cannot recommend highly enough to you. It is a comic book, and it's called Champions. It's a Marvel.
Yes.
It's a Marvel book, and we are only on number 3, but the awesome thing about this book, okay, there's so many. It's written by Mark Waid, and the illustrator is Humberto Ramos, Mexican artist.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we can, when the first trade paperback comes out, we can do this book, do our...
I'm down for our weekly.
I'm so down.
Yeah, I'm down for it, just so I can talk about the cover of issue number 2, because I love that cover.
Mm-hmm. So, the Champions book, it happens post-Civil War II. And it reunites... It is basically after, spoiler alert, fast forward past this, it reunites the three Avengers who leave the Avengers because they're just so disillusioned with what happened during Civil War. So that's Ms. Marvel, Kamala Khan, Spider-Man, Miles Morales, and Nova, Sam Alexander. And so they basically are wanting to form their own group to be what they thought the Avengers was going to be, or at least what they wanted it to be in their heart. They put the call out there to other heroes, and thinking that no one's going to want to join them, but they actually have some partners in some very surprising people. So some of the other characters that come to want to be part of Champions is Hulk, Amadeus Cho, the new Totally Awesome Hulk, which if you're not reading Totally Awesome Hulk, also give it a read. I love it. I love him as a character. He's super funny, and he's totally a different Hulk than Bruce Banner, as far as like how he deals with hulking out. Also, let's see, who else? Viv Vision, so who is the young, android daughter of Vision. Which there's, if you're not reading Tom King's Vision,
I cannot recommend it enough. Tom King is amazing. I'm all for it.
It just finished. It was amazing. I think it's what, it's 2 trades so far. I don't know if a third one's gonna, I guess the third one has to
third
come
one
out.
Is gonna come out.
But, Tom King is amazing. I love him as a writer. He writes the heck out of anything that he's writing. He's also the, writer on Sheriff of Babylon. He's writing Detective,
Batman comics, and he wrote Omega Man, which is currently a New York Times bestseller.
Yes.
Wow.
And then Jen's favorite character, who is part of Champions, is Cyclops, a young Scott Summers. Which, very interesting about Cyclops. He has never been part of a group in the Marvel Universe that was not an X-Men group. This is the first time that he'll be part of a group that has nothing to do with the X-Men.
Wow.
So this Scott Summers is, it should be noted, is a very young Scott Summers. It's not the Scott Summers who, for the most part, in Marvel Universe right now, we know to be, or we believe to be, dead.
Spoiler alert.
After him... kind of being a not so nice guy.
Hashtag Emma Frost deserves better.
So this is a team of completely made up of teenagers, which I love. I love the idea that it is like this new fresh take on superheroes, and the fact that they are coming together because they're so disillusioned with the adults in their life, basically, is kind of amazing, because I think as everybody who's been a teenager realizes or has had that, like, come to Jesus moment where they realize that adults in their lives do not know everything.
Mm-hmm.
That they, I remember the exact moment when I was like, wow, my mom, like, she's not the end all be all of knowing everything in the world. Like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now I know she's just human, but I mean, when you grow up, adults, teachers, your parents, your grandparents, whatever, they're like, oh my gosh, you look up to them. And also, if you're not reading Ms. Marvel,
get on that quick.
Yeah,
because,
it's amazing. And the storyline between her and Carol Danvers is just heart-wrenching.
It is absolutely amazing, and it will make you cry.
Yes. I had tears. A little bit of what I'm saying is like the rose-colored glasses come off for Kamala, mm-hmm. when it comes to her, her hero, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So this is kind of, Mark Wade was actually, quoted as saying that, here with the champions, their primary job is not to punch criminals, but rather to deal with common people problems in ways that the bigger superhero groups aren't built to. And mm-hmm. so what you're really going to be seeing, and what we've already been seeing in this book, with the three issues, is that it's the concept of these teens, coming together to make a difference, in the world. That this book is really cultivating the idea, of, youth activism. And I love that,
mm-hmm.
And especially with everything that's going on in the world right now, and what we're seeing with lots of young
mm-hmm.
kids and teenagers now, like, standing up and basically saying, you know, we have voices and we want to be heard. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I see this Champions book going. And Mark Wade is a really awesome writer, and Umberto, his art is really cool. In fact, little side note, Mark Wade came into Heidi Ho Comics last week.
I saw that.
And he came up to the counter and he said, "You don't happen to be Kristen, do you?" And I did recognize him. I'm like, I know this guy, but I didn't know where. I just thought he was a
the connection wasn't made.
I thought he was just a regular that I recognized. I said, "Yes, I am." And he said, "Oh, well, awesome pick of the week, because Champions number 3 was my pick of the week." I said, "Oh, thank you. I love that book." He's all, "Yeah, it's mine."
Oh,
and I'm like, I still didn't make the connection, and I'm looking at him like, what? And he's like, "Hi, I'm Mark Wade," and he put out his hand to shake. And so I actually have a picture with him. I'll post it on Instagram.
I'm so jealous. I'm so jealous.
Wow. But the reason he looked familiar is I had met him at Emerald City, and we spent a long time talking, because at the time he had just released Strange Fruit. Number 1.
I love Strange Fruit.
So, yeah, so I was talking to him about that, and we had just at the time to purchase Heidi Ho. We were only in it for a couple of months, and he owns a shop. I don't know, somewhere out west. Midwest.
Ohio?
Somewhere.
Somewhere around there. Somewhere in the flyby country. Sorry.
Yeah, so
I had to.
So that's why he looked familiar. And so he's so super nice, and he didn't flinch when we asked him to take a picture, and he was just so, like, appreciative of the fact that I told him that I recommend the heck out of that book. And I'm recommending the heck out of it here to you guys tonight. Definitely check out Champions. It's really good. It's very fun. It's a group of teen superheroes, and all that it encompasses being a teen and being a superhero.
I love it. That is, wow. You just closed the show. Drop the mic. Absolutely. Oh my God. That's so awesome. I can't believe because I saw the picture, but I didn't know the whole backstory about the Mark Wade story, but man, hearing it for the first time here, oh my God, sounds amazing. Sounds totally amazing. Great on the radar, guys. Do you guys have any shout-outs?
Well, definitely check out Instagram, Comadres y Comics. I'll be posting that picture of myself with Mark Wade, and I'm also going to post a picture of Jen's Spock shirt so you can see it in all her glory.
Yeah. Excellent.
Shout out to Beyonce because she's the one who sang the opening music to this called Run the World. That I just had to. I love Beyonce. She's amazing.
And we do run the world.
Uh-huh.
We make your children. I'd like to shout out all you guys. Thank you guys for coming. Thank you for bringing the cookies. Thank you for drinking with me. Thank you absolutely for talking comics with me, because sometimes I just need that comic book outlet, you know, that I can't get everywhere. I know my brother, he's also a geek, but sometimes he goes off on a different tangent. So I like that we can center this on, like, women power and Latinos, and you guys are really in the know about, like, the current things out there that I can dig into. So thanks a lot for that.
My pleasure.
Welcome. It's a pleasure, honestly.
Well, thanks, guys. This has been our fourth episode, and we are your hosts. I'm Sarah.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Jennifer.
Bye, guys. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.